I want you to notice before we read the beginning of the chapter, chapter 3 of 1 Timothy and verse number 15. And the Bible says, "If I tarry long, that thou mayest know how thou oughtest to behave thyself in the house of God, which is the church of the living God, the pillar and ground of the truth." This is how we're supposed to behave in the house of God. Now, I'm going to use the qualifications for the pastor, and I'm going to apply this to our homes today. So we're going to go pretty fast in the beginning of this. But if you really want to know what the pastor's core beliefs are, his core beliefs, his core behaviors, you just look at his family. You know as well as I do that a pastor can say one thing in the pulpit and live another thing at home. If you really want to know what he believes, take a good look at his kids. They'll tell you exactly what he believes. If you really want to know how he treats women, look at his wife. She will tell you by observation how he values and treats women. This has been a very important thing in my life, coming not from a pastor's home and having no training on these things, and wanting my children, as my father did, to be better Christians than I. My wife and I, I'll give you a brief piece of my testimony. When we were we got married and we went off to Bible college. We were 20 years old when we were married. When we were 23, we had our first child. And I won't go into the detail of the story, but we had a car accident the week after we graduated from Bible college, before we got to our first Sunday's meeting on deputation. So between graduation on Saturday night and the next Sunday, our daughter died. And she was 21 months old, killed in an accident. And we just stopped and evaluated. First of all, when a tragedy comes like that in your life, you find out for sure if you really love God, if you're really called, if your focus is correct. And we checked that, and we knew our hearts were right, and the Lord was going to use that in our life. And if I've signed your Bible, I've signed Romans 8:28 because of that event in our lives. But from that moment, and really before that, we began to realize that every moment with our children is precious. Every event with your wife or your husband is precious. We made a vow to each other during that time. We would never depart without a show of affection. Every time I leave my wife to go out of the house or to go off to the church or to wherever, we say, "I love you." And we keep affection. My children, I raised my children kissing them. I kiss my boys. They're men now. They, "Oh, Dad." Now, they know better than do that. I'm going to kiss them. I'm going to be affectionate with them. It's precious. It's precious. It must be. And you have to maintain that. And so everything was special. As I went off church planting, I'm one of these guys, I can get consumed in work. I mean, I just get ate up with it. I could go everywhere all at the same time and it doesn't bother me, but I can't leave my family behind. So I've taken them with me everywhere I've ever gone. I'm a pilot. I fly little bitty airplanes. They've flown all over the United States. I put them in the back seats. I fly to start churches. I pack them in the truck. I pack them in the horse trailer, whatever I'm doing. I take them with me. They've been on hospital calls, visits. They've been in the funeral homes. Shh, there's dead people here. Shh. Whatever. We've had a great time. And then your children understand your heart. And they see you have compassion on people, and they learn how to have compassion. You never have to say, "Now, you have to be compassionate." They know that in that position, that's what you would do. And then here's the best part. They see you get wrong attitudes and then get right with God. And they learn how to get right with God by watching Dad get right with God. Maybe that's the most valuable lesson we can teach them. And so as they walk with us, when we humble ourselves, they learn to humble ourselves. But if you hide that from your children, they'll pick up your sin, but never pick up the ability to humble themselves and get back right with God again. So let's walk through this real quick. Specifically, the pastor's children will reflect his attitude towards these four areas. Number one, women. And this is a dangerous area in every culture, in every place in the world. The pastor's attitude towards women must be correct, and his children reflect that. It's very scary to me sometimes when I meet a pastor and I see his teenage boys that are way too flirtatious. They're inappropriate. Where did they learn that? They learned that from dad. And he may say one thing in the pulpit, but if he has eyes that wander, if he has hands that wander, so will his boys. The apple doesn't fall far from the tree. But if that dad is careful, those boys will know how to act. Also his daughters. If he is correctly affectionate in his home, that daughter will be correctly affectionate. She won't crave the affections of man because she'll be very secure with her relationship with her father. But if he's not affectionate, if he's not a good father, she will crave that manly affection. She could become very immoral because of that. So it reflects that. Secondly, the pastor's children reflects the pastor's attitude towards money. Towards money. We're talking about the pastor and his family. Now, these are four areas that we all must deal with. And we don't preach a lot of sermons on these four areas, but we live these examples every day in front of our people. Our morality, our money. Thirdly, adversity. Your children will take adversity the way you take adversity. And we all have adversity. Some people pretend like they don't have adversity. Well, don't do that. Your kids will never learn how to handle it. Some people crumble under adversity. Don't do that. You'll teach your children to do the same. Nope. You walk by faith. You be honest with your kids. You walk into adversity. And I like to look at adversity two ways when it comes to family. Adversity will either cause your family to have faith, or it will cause your family to have stress. Let's talk about some adversity. Here's some adversity the pastor and his family go through. The church is having financial problems. So when you face that adversity, if you can walk by faith, keep your mouth closed when you're around your children about the financial problems of the church, your kids will pick up the same thing. My children, as they became adults and went into ministry, oftentimes they'll say to me, "Dad, I didn't even know we were having problems back then with the finances." Well, they'll hear me speaking to someone about how we were handling something in the past, and they'll say, "We didn't know. Life was great for us." Exactly. You teach them how to handle adversity by walking by faith and trusting God to handle that. They'll do the same thing. Thirdly is work. Work. The pastor's children reflect his attitudes towards work. It's been my privilege through the years to place many pastors in pulpits as the pastor. And when I was in Oregon in the United States as a church planter, I started 12 churches, and in addition to that, I placed 10 pastors in existing churches. And so oftentimes I would go into the church and I would sit down with the men of the church and the deacons, or however they selected, and we'd go through a process of who do we talk to? Where do we get these men? And I said, "Well, if you will let me, I'll sit down with you and we'll interview these men and we'll look at some things." And of course, they had questions. They wanted to make a big list of questions. "What do you believe about eternal security? What do you believe about this, that, and the other thing?" Well, first of all, if they didn't believe all those things correctly, I wouldn't bring them in. That's not what I'm looking at. So all those things will be checked off. Here's what I'm looking at. I want to see how their boys the pastor's boys handle the teenage girls in the youth department when they come to the church for the first time? If they sit over there and sit on their hands and they don't know how to talk to them, we got a problem. If they go over and they're too flirtatious, we got a problem. And sometimes when you try to tell a church that, they don't understand. I don't really expect them to understand, but I expect you to understand. I expect you to say, okay, I can see those things. Secondly, money, the same thing. So we would ask them questions. Do you have debt? How much debt do you have? Do you have debt on a credit card? Thirdly, adversity. I would ask them what stresses them. What's the biggest stress in your home? And then fourthly, and this is the big one, because we're going to hire, you know, we're praying about getting the right pastor for our church. Their work ethic. How do you know their work ethic? Watch those boys. For the greatest joy in my life is to work with someone. I love working with people. I love co-laboring with you. I've spoken for several of you in this room, and that's a joy. We've created a bond because we were in the yoke together that I don't have with anybody else. I mean, we could go out to dinner and have dessert and talk about a lot of things, but I still wouldn't have the bond with that group as I would with those I'm in the yoke with. So I want to look at those boys, and I want to know how they work. And I would ask, maybe instead of the pastor, I might ask the boy, hey, have you ever had a job? No. What's your favorite thing to do? Play video games? Send that pastor packing. Well, and then the pastor will immediately defend. But my children are young. Ecclesiastes says it's good for a child to bear the yoke in his youth. Yes. And if that's the attitude of the pastor, the children will have the same attitude. It's been a joy of mine to have some of my children on my staff. And they're, I know if I need a hard job done, I'm going to call my own kids. I know they'll work hard at it. They'll give themselves to the task. Now, they may complain because I'm dad, but they'll still work hard at it. The pastor's children will tell you also if he's apt to teach in their behavior and obedience. You know, that's one of the qualifications. Can somebody tell me what time this session is over so I don't run over? 11:25, okay. 20. If I go over, you start doing this, okay? I don't want to go over. If the pastor, now think about this. How could a pastor lead a church if he wasn't apt to teach? You've got to be able to, and not just preach. In everything you do, you teach. When you walk amongst the people and you shake hands, you teach, you're teaching. When you have a meal with them, you're teaching. In everything you're teaching. So here you have, if you have a pastor and his children don't act like him, he's not a very good teacher. And if he can't, and we're going to look at this passage in a moment, if he can't rule his own household, how shall he rule the house of God? And that's why we're using this passage as an illustration. Second thing, the pastor's wife will tell you if he's blameless in marriage. She will tell you if he's given to hospitality. Okay? So, now I'm not going to go into the doctrinal differences on the husband of one wife, but it does say that we're to be blameless husband of one wife. If the pastor's blameless, you can see it in the wife's trust in her eyes. You can look at her, and you can know. Does she trust him? Is he blameless? Boy, our relationships are so important. And if he's given hospitality. You know, as well as I do, and some of you much more than I do, how important it is to be hospitable to people. The biggest tool I've had in my ministry, and I've pastored for 30 years now, is bringing people in my home, going into their homes, going to their place of business, and really getting to know them and being a part of their lives and caring. That's given to hospitality. It's very dangerous if your whole family is not given to hospitality. I've seen this. I've seen pastors that are very good at it, but their wives are not. So they're not training and teaching this at home. So the wife's got her little castle. She doesn't want anybody in it. The pastor, he's in the congregation shaking hands, and, oh, I'm so glad to see you. But the family's isolated. There's a disconnect. There's a problem there. The family is important, and you train your church by how your family is. Let's go through these 15 areas where the pastor must be blameless. And I'm going to go fast again here. Number one, husband of one wife. Husband of one wife, blameless in marriage. Husband of one wife, blameless in marriage. So in every area of your marriage, you should be blameless. Let me encourage you and challenge you today. If you have an area of your life, of your marriage, that's not blameless, you should take a time out and fix that. You should take whatever it takes, because you're not going to endure in the ministry if your wife does not safely trust in you like the proverbial husband safely trusts in her. Number two, vigilant. Busy about our Father's business. Now we're talking about the pastor and his family. Boy, when that pastor is vigilant, busy about his Father's business, it rubs off on his family. His whole family is involved. I had teachers, as you did, that told me, now the pastor, this was a big thing when I was in college. The pastor's called, his wife is not called, his children are not called. That will get you in trouble. All of the men that said that to me lost their families. They all lost their families because that's a wrong philosophy. You and your wife are one. If God called you, you're one. You can't escape that. As a matter of fact, I would take that a step further and say, you and your wife are one. If God's called you and she's not willing, you just got yourself a very controversial life. If you and your wife are one and she won't go, you're not going either. It's going to be a mess. And your children are an extension of you. If you and your wife are one and you have children, it looks like you're all one unit to me. That one unit goes in. I have people that go to my church today that have told, I mean, numerous people, when my children were little, especially my daughter, I have a daughter with a very bubbly personality. She was very pretty when she was little. She's very beautiful now, but she was very pretty when she was little, little skinny thing. And she just loved older people. And so if an old person visitor would come to our church, she would think it was her grandpa. She just loved everybody, you know. So she'd go up there and want to hold their hand when she was little. And I had this one man, his name is John Hawkins. And he came to our church, and he was a gruff old man. He had a shaved head and a Fu Manchu, and he just looked mean. And I looked at him, and he looked at me, and we just kind of stared off. But my daughter just runs over to him and grabs him around the leg. And he's like, you know, get away, kid, you bug me. But she wouldn't go away. And she just loved him. And every time he'd come to church, she'd go over and want to sit in his lap. And we went and visited. And I maybe the second week that he came, I sent somebody else the first week, and they told me he was already saved, so I didn't feel it was urgent to go there. But I went the second week. And I asked my daughter, Amanda, would you like to go visit John, the bald man? She said, oh, yeah, I want to go. So we go. And sure enough, we go there, and on the visit, you know, I'm trying to tell her, now, Amanda, you need to sit by me and not talk. Oh, that didn't happen. She talked. And then she wanted to go sit by John, and she went and sat by John. And to make a long story short, about 4 months later, I mean, John came all the time, John and his wife, Kathy. And John was a gruff guy. I mean, he was just gruff. One day he walks up to the front of the church. I'm standing up there shaking hands. He says, Pastor, I want you to know I don't come to this church because of you. I come to this church because of Amanda. I said, well, that's good enough for me. I'll take that. Now, I don't pastor that church anymore. I left that area 6 years ago, and I moved back to my sending church. I pastor my home church. And I don't get any Christmas cards or birthday cards from John. But my daughter does. And he's still in the church and doing well. And he's very old, and his health is very frail. And he's going to go home to be with the Lord from that church, thanks to my daughter. And your family is so important that you're vigilant. Number three, sober. Sober is serious about your father's business. Be serious. Your children should know you're serious about the Lord's work. Serious. Number four, good behavior. And that's appropriate at all times. Your family must be the same on Sunday as it is on Saturday. You've got to be the same. And so you have to be sober, serious about your father's business, and of good behavior, appropriate all the time. You know, how sad is it that in some pastors' homes, they have to hide some behavior so that church members won't be offended? But if you have behavior that would offend church members, you ought to change that. You ought to correct that. You ought to be able to bring people into your home and have your children share your life with them, and it be a discipling tool, not an offense. Number five, given to hospitality. Given to hospitality. His home is a godly example of hospitality. Now, for me, this is something that I've had to train my staff to do, because I, as many of you, when you get your first helper, whether it's a lay person or an employee, assistant pastor, they're usually very young and they don't have children yet. So they don't really know how to do this. So what I do is I bring them over and I have them host families with me. So I'll invite somebody over to the house and I'll make sure that my young assistant, maybe even single pastor, is with me. And they learn. And my children grow up that way. They learn that, hey, the world does not evolve around me. It's not about me. It's about the Lord. And we're given to hospitality, and we're going to do whatever we can. And if anybody needs anything, hey, here's a good motto. Treat everyone exceptionally. So what can I do? Well, I'll make an exception for you, and you, and you, and you, and you, and you. So won't that drive you crazy? No, but it might get you some church members that know you love them, and your children might grow up doing the same thing with that servant's heart. Next, apt to teach. Apt to teach. His family is taught the most. Now, your greatest disciple should be your family. Your greatest disciple should not be the faithful man in the church. It should be your son, your daughter, your wife. That's the great disciples. When I was very young in the ministry, 25 years old, I met a man that I wrongfully judged to be a poor man of God. He was about my age now, and he had a son in the ministry. This man had had a nervous breakdown, this older man, and gotten out of the ministry. And I thought, in my self-justifying, condemning ignorance, I thought, this man must not be a very good pastor. This man must not be much of a man of God if he can't stay in the ministry. And I was very condemning in my thought. And then I got to know his four adult children, two of them pastors' wives, love the Lord, serve the Lord. And it didn't take me very long to reverse my ridiculous decision. That man had discipled four unbelievable servants of God. That man, even though he could not pastor, raised two boys that were tremendous pastors. Changed my mind. I then began to want to disciple my kids and be as good a pastor as he was. Even though my church ran hundreds, he had great disciples. You should have great disciples, your children. Number, what are we on? Seven, thank you. Not given to wine. No intoxicating or addictive substances at all. That should just go without being said. But unfortunately, in our world today, that is a stress. Number eight, no striker. No striker. To tempt or have malice or meanness. Now, that does not mean that you're not a firm person. That does not mean that you don't have a backbone. I pride myself in being a strong person. I'm a strong person. I'm a cowboy. I'm a shooter. I'm I'm relatively physically fit, and I pride myself in that, but there can never be temper with strength. It's supposed to be a gentle man, not a mean man, or malice or meanness. Number nine, not given to filthy lucre. I'm going to go fast now. Not given to filthy lucre. Or we're supposed to be givers, not takers financially. Number 10, patient. Right, fast. I got to get to the main point here. And with everyone and God's directing, we're patient. Now, and that's two different things to me. Patient with every person and patient in how God's dealing with our lives. Because sometimes, boy, that's what I get impatient. I can be patient with you, but the way God's leading me, sometimes that makes me upset. Number 11, not a brawler. Not ornery. Boy, in my household, all my kids' lives, they heard me say, no drama. No drama. I don't want the drama. Can't take it. It's not a soap opera. It's supposed to be the peace of God. Number 11, not a brawler. Oh, is that what I just did? Number 12, not covetous. We live simple. Now, this is a big thing in America. We're very prosperous, and some of you are more prosperous than others. Remember the Ecclesiastes exhortation, a sore evil. Money's kept to the owner's hurt. That's a sore evil. I have enough prosperity to just ruin my kids. So I've withheld some of my prosperity from them and taught them simpler ways because I don't want them to be covetous. Thank God I did, because my kids are in ministry and they have to start at the bottom, and one of them's going to a very poor mission field in Tibet. And he's going to have to learn how to live very poor. Can't be covetous. Number 11, ruleth his own house well. Oh, that's 13. Ruleth his own house well, having his children in subjection with all gravity. I'm not sure what your blank is there. Yeah, ruling his own house well. And then number 14, not a novice. Be good at what you do. And by the way, you can be a young man or woman of God and not a novice. That's not as much age-related as it is preparation-related. I'm not young anymore, but I was pastoring when I was young. And that doesn't mean you're a novice. You can be preparing for a decade and be in the ministry when you're very young. Number 15, good report of them which are without, which is your testimony and reputation. They're very important. Now, the crux of this message, the main thing, are the last 4 points. Number one, practical advice. Number one, keep your home spiritual. Keep your home spiritual. It is very easy to speak spiritually at church and not speak spiritually at home. It's very easy to lead people in prayer spontaneously at church and not do that at home. Reverse that. Don't do that. Your children should be used to you saying, let's pray about that, and you just kneel right there and pray. Your children should be used to you discussing spiritual matters with them. Keep your home spiritual. Our home, when our children were small, we had a family devotion at the breakfast table every morning. And then as they got older and our time schedules, when they started working different jobs and the time schedule wouldn't work, we have Bible time in the morning. When you get up, you don't talk, you read your Bible. And here's our motto. My kids live by this to this day. No Bible, no breakfast. No Bible, no burrito. No Bible, no beans. That's breakfast, lunch, and dinner. You don't read your Bible, you don't get any food. I esteem his words more than my necessary food. Number two, involve your family in everything possible. Don't leave them behind. Involve them. I just texted my daughter this morning. She's home working in our ministry there, and I said, I miss you very much on this trip. And boy, that started. She blew my phone up then, you know, texting back and forth. Tell brother so-and-so I said hi. Tell brother Billy, tell brother Billy I said hi. I want to go back up to the mountain. Good to see you, brother Billy. Yeah, she has all these texts in there, and she remembers all your school teachers' names. I remember your name, but that's the only one, brother. She knows them all because she's been on these trips before. I'm so glad I raised my kids that way. Number three, develop a balance in life between church and family time. Now, this point, I believe, is why Brother Chapel chose me for this message. You can't just live at church. You also have to have a normal family life. My kids have done many mission trips with me all of their lives as children and adults. But we've also fished and hunted and snow skied and water skied and hiked and shopped and you name it. We've done it. And it's been a great adventure. And every one of those things to me is a teaching opportunity and a training opportunity and a closeness opportunity. And you have to balance that out. And some of you are like me. The world would call you a workaholic. I think that's because they're poor workers, but they would call you a workaholic. Balance it. Balance it with your home life and your children and the playtime and the things that you do. Number four, lead your family like your life depends upon it. And I want to say to you that it does. Your life depends. Now, for me, God called me to preach when I was 13 years old. I'm 53 years old. Do the math. I've been doing this a while. I don't know anything else. I don't want to do anything else. My motto when I was 13 was, I want to be like Paul. I've finished my course. I'm working on finishing. If my family doesn't follow the Lord, I disqualify myself from ministry. If my teenagers, they're not teenagers, they're adults now, but if my kids, when they lived at home, didn't follow the Lord, I just disqualify myself. If my wife thinks I'm a hypocrite and leaves me, I've disqualified myself. Hey, my life does depend upon it. So I've tried my best from my youth to lead my family like my life depends on it. And I want to end with that one thought. Play with your kids like your life depends on it. Pray with your wife like your life depends upon it. Spend family time like your very life depends upon it. Because it really does. And guess what? When you do that, your church will see you do it, and you will be discipling your church to have awesome families. They'll be great families because they'll see your great family, and they'll say, well, that's what Pastor and his wife do and his kids. Let's go do that too. And you'll have a great discipleship just with that.